Does this have a happy ending?
Oh, yeah. We can wrap you in a full bodysuit of neoprene heat-resistant rubber, or we can raise the temperature in Cosmo's office to 98.6 degrees, which is probably what we'll have to do because the neoprene would suffocate you. Either way, you've got a top speed of 2 inches per second. Any faster than that? And big guys with guns, but you'll probably do fine.
I love lectures from Ray Stantz.
Right?
And that's all I could think for that.
I was so glad he was in this movie.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory, a presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. My name is Eric. Thank you very much for joining us for our very special film cast. We got a great movie for you this week, just like we do pretty much every week. I want to go ahead and start things off by introducing the panel. Thank you very much for being here today, lady and gentlemen. Over here, you got your socially conscious techno-apocalypse in my low-rent heist flick. It's Rich.
I left my passport and my other cell phone.
That's a good idea. Good idea. Hold on. I know we're being covert and all, but I just need to turn my earpiece up to 11. It's Vanessa.
I mean, 11's the highest number, right?
You're fired.
Okay, 12.
Every time Stephen Tobolowsky says that word, I can't help but think we had this conversation yesterday. It's Jason.
Passport.
Ooh, say it again.
Passport.
And finally, his voice is his passport, but it's really just a very good forgery. It's the kid.
I was verified by the puppy with kisses.
That's much better, actually, now that you mentioned it. Much, much better.
Like, seriously, we're watching the movie, and he started interrupting me by getting all frantic and stuff, so I paused the movie, and I looked at him, and I said, my voice is my passport. Verify me. And he promptly bathed me with puppy kisses, and I was like, I'm verified.
So, quick note, since you brought it up, my bank implemented a voice recognition thing for when I call in, and I literally had to say... My voice is my password. Verify
had to
me.
Say.
They made me say it. They
so
said,
good.
Repeat this phrase. My voice is my password. Verify me. And every time I call the bank something specific to make sure it's my account, they have me repeat that line. And I giggle every time because I love this movie.
That's great. Sir, could you please try to get through it without laughing? We would need to make sure it's you.
At this point, though, it won't verify if I'm not giggling.
That's
so.
Probably true, actually.
It's part of the law.
Because their voice recognition software is a lot more complicated than this one was.
I knew that joke before we watched this for this, but I am sure I had never seen this movie before, so I don't know where I got that joke from.
It's probably from Richard, because he said that story about the bank a couple of times.
I do, and I will also say it's one of those movies that you can watch, forget about, and still remember fun little details in it.
But I literally didn't come across anything else that triggered any recollection, so...
Okay, that's fair. Well, let's get into it a little bit. The movie we're talking about this week is Sneakers. This was released September 11th, 1992. I have to say, when I told you guys to do this movie, I mentioned it a couple, three times because not everybody here had seen it. And people kept asking me what movie was, and I kept saying it came out in the 80s. In fact, I would have told you this came out very much in the 80s.
I thought it was 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, my, no.
No.
92. And not only that, but in my head, the movie actually looked more like an 80s movie than it did. When I'm watching it the other night, I'm sitting here going, oh.
Looked like a 90s movie to me.
But I guess with the All-Star cast, it was more of a callback to the films, the spy films of
the 80s. So much of the tech, and maybe the style, the way it's written too, the heist stuff, but so much of the tech feels, there's obviously a generational kind of break in technology that's very succinct when it comes to computerized tech. And a lot of this was kind of at that herald, that breaking point when we're leading up to encryption being the new, the new thing that we were going to be dealing with for the next.
Still transferring data over phone lines.
And it's
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. I just realized why the title of this movie makes sense. For the longest time, since we put this on the lineup, I was wondering why we were going to watch a movie about shoes.
Yeah. Right?
I just realized it's Sneakers because they're sneaking around.
They actually called their jobs sneak.
I get that now. I literally just got that.
She's good at this, ladies and gentlemen, I promise.
Well, she's watched so many spy genre movies. But
I have to say, watching this, I really thought that it was cast in a much earlier period too, because the camera work and some of the sceneries really put me in mind of The Greatest American Hero, which used to be one of my favorite TV shows of all time. But that is back there a little bit before 92.
Well, similarly, though, I was envisioning things along the lines of War Games.
Right.
You know, a cinematography that I would have expected to be more like Fletch. I mean, I just, in my head, this movie was a different movie for some reason.
Yeah.
I had seen it. This was not my first viewing.
Yeah, I'd seen it a long time ago, too. I remember watching it when I was a kid because Mom had a thing for Robert Redford.
A lot of moms had a thing for Robert Redford.
And she was very thrilled to see that it was on the lineup. We watched it together last night.
Oh, cool.
Yay.
And actually, she's really thrilled with the lineup through February.
Nice.
Spoiler alert for the audience. We've got good movies coming up.
Well, really? According to Jason's mom.
No, I second that. We've got some great
and
stuff
kid
coming up.
I've only seen like two of them, but the two that I've seen are great.
I just said according to Jason's mom and kid.
And kid.
Yep.
And Jason's kid. Mom and kid and kid. But the other thing I was going to say was it reminds me of The Expendables in 1990.
Oh, because of the cast?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about that.
It's an all-star cast of retirees.
And I had completely... That was
thrown together in a spy movie.
Better than that. Oscar winners and Oscar nominees, every one of the main characters, except for like one. David Strathern, I can't have said, wasn't yet. He was later.
He did go on to get nominated, I think.
Or win, I don't remember which. I saw the note on it, but I didn't look it up. Anyway, yeah, Sneakers came out in 92, was number one at the box office, made $10 million its opening weekend, which is a lot then. Rated PG-13, runtime of 2 hours and 6 minutes. A security pro finds his past coming back to haunt him when he and his unique team, I like that, are tasked with retrieving a particularly important item. To the point, tells you nothing. Dig it.
That's a really good streamline.
That's definitely one of the better ones we've seen.
Well, credit that one to IMDb because we don't know who writes those.
Right.
So this was the guy who was good at it. Directed by Phil Alden Robinson. Did Field of Dreams a couple years before this in 89. The Sum of All Fears about 10 years after this and pretty much nothing else that I knew as a director.
That does vaguely foreshadow one of the two biggest surprises that I encountered in this movie, however.
How's
that?
James Earl Jones MacGuffin?
Yes, that one.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah.
Oh, snap.
When
that
we
was
first
James
heard
Jones.
His voice on the phone, I just had just this tiniest little tremor, and I was like, what is that? No, it just...
It couldn't be.
Then it was. And that's going to earn this star some extra star power for me.
Now for the fun part of this, written by Phil Alden Robinson as well. He was one of the writers. Other movies that he famously wrote on, Rhinestone.
Wait.
Which Rich might be
famously.
Rich might be the only one here who even knows that one when I say it. And that's fine.
I get an inward kazoo for that one.
It'll remain.
Oh.
I'm not alone.
Physician.
Look it up. You'll be horrified. Feel free. All of Me. All of Me, the Steve Martin, Lily Tomlin thing we've mentioned a couple of times.
Love that movie.
Field of Dreams and Ghost Dad.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Flex, but okay.
Also writing credit went to Lawrence Lasker, who we've seen here before on War Games, and he also wrote Project X. What's that? Bad joke? Was it a bad joke? Is that what it was? I see Jason biting his finger. I appreciate that. Just don't bite the microphone. And, I didn't know you could open your mouth. Anyway, Walter F. Parks, who also was a writer on War Games as well. And music by James Horner.
Now, without giving away anything, was anyone who's involved in this project also involved in our next project that we're doing?
I'd have to look it up, but I'm not sure.
I'm kind of curious because I can see some vague thematic.
I see Nessa going for the phone.
There's some thematics, but I know the next piece very, very well.
Yeah.
And I don't have
any connections.
Okay.
No overlap.
There is a through line there, of course. That was actually pretty natural, I thought, of when we put the movies on the schedule. It's like, because we're doing Hackers next week, right? Is what we're talking about. So we went from, you know, this to Hackers.
My trifecta is Sneakers, Hackers, and Real Geniuses.
Real Geniuses would be back to the 80s again.
Oh.
That's my triple. If I'm doing a triple movie night, that's what I'm doing.
That's a good collection, man.
That needs to happen.
That's solid.
That needs to be on the list if it's not.
Personal note, this film has one of James Horner's most unique, most fun, and least James Horner-y scores I've ever heard.
I would not have picked him.
I've got that quote, by the way, from somewhere else, and I was like, I've got to read that quote verbatim, because this is definitely one of the least James Horner-y score, but it's great.
It is good.
Horner-y is such an interesting word, and I like it.
like it. It makes you feel funny.
Does that mean that other movies are hornerier than this
hornerier?
Movie?
More horny?
What? if you say that hornerier. With just a little more redneck. I just...
Hornerier.
I like this music a lot. I actually captured some sequences for the clips that mostly I captured because I wanted to hear the music in that part.
The music was good in this one. Right. I enjoyed
it really
movie.
Was. It wasn't over the top.
It was enhancement.
It was great.
I only even noticed it in a few scenes, but when I noticed it, it was on point and I was really aware of that.
Which is how the music should work.
That's nice. Well, I've got to say, James Horner is one of those... One of those composers who is so prolific. I mean, there's no point in me talking about his career on the show because we're going to run in hundreds of movies that the man has done.
Name two, because I'm not placing the name.
Oh, well, let's see, what would be the most famous examples? He's done one on the show. He did Willow, our very first. He also is the guy that did Titanic.
Okay.
You know?
That's
who
I can blame.
Which had the song that went on and on.
Yeah.
And on.
That's who I can blame.
You're thinking of the song that never ends.
No, I'm thinking of the song that will go on.
It's okay. I knew what he was talking about. I hated that score. I've played it before.
Oh, I love that score.
To play it is annoying.
Oh, you mean like in band?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You were that generation.
Still less annoying than playing Bolero's Ravel. Or Ravel's Bolero?
Maybe.
Word order matters.
So, but one day I had been collecting scores for several years at this point because I was in love with film scores, especially as a D&D guy. I wanted to run games with music in the background back before my hearing was so shot that was a waste of my time because then I had to pause and go, what did you say? Constantly. But back then, when I was, you know, doing thematic music for all of my games, I collected film scores like crazy. And I got to a point where I had so many CDs. You kids today, CDs were this plastic circular thing that I had so many CDs of film scores. And I wonder if you asked me who my favorite composer was, who I'd gotten by the most of, I would have said John Williams. No, I'd still say John. I'd say John Williams, or I would have said Danny Elfman. You know, one of these very strongly thematic composers that I thought of a lot. I once went in and looked at my collection, and I had almost twice as much James Horner as any other single composer. The man had just done that many more movies that I loved.
Right.
So yeah. So there's my my.
So out of all of those, which one would you say was the horneriest?
And that's really hard to say. But there is a lot of composers definitely have similar qualities that you feel in their compositions that you see from one movie to the next, one score to the next.
When you go through multiple of them.
When I said Willow and Titanic, for example, you may not think, well, those don't really sell, but there's elements that I can see.
There are elements that cross.
Yeah. This is the same composer. Okay, yeah, I can see this.
You hear an Elfman soundtrack, you know it's an Elfman soundtrack.
Well, yeah. Definitely. Williams, too, a lot of cases.
Yeah, true.
Although what's become more the case, and not the case with Elfman, is you hear a Williams soundtrack, you know it's Williams. You hear a David Arnold soundtrack, you know it's Williams. You hear it. You get the idea. That's just kind of the way it is. Starring Mr. Robert Redford as Bishop.
Whoop.
Not a lot at the time. He did A Decent Proposal the year after this. The Horse Whisperer was a few years after that. But if you're part of the geek zeitgeist, we saw him in all his villainous glory in the MCU recently. Mm-hmm. He was in Captain America, Winter Soldier, rather. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of which one. Winter Soldier and in
Endgame,
Avengers Endgame, as the Hydra guy, the head of Hydra, Alexander Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
Alexander. Oh. Remember him?
Yeah.
He was really great in that role. I mean, he's kind of smarty and evil. But he
still looks
good
fantastic
at this stuff. Yeah, well, he still looks the same. That's the best part.
Yeah, he did not get old once he got old.
Right.
He got old and stayed there.
Just kind of pretty much.
He got refined.
More to the point, in this, he didn't necessarily look young. I mean, what was he was really known for when he was younger? There was definitely stuff he was really
the
known
natural,
for.
The Natural, The Sting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I know he was a sex icon, but I don't know what he did.
It was before your time.
Don't choke her like that.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
It was him, wasn't it? He was in Butch Cassidy with
Paul
Newman.
Name? Paul Newman, thank you. I'm so good at movies, I can think of these people off the top of your head. let's see. Dan Aykroyd as Mother.
Yay.
I love this guy.
This was a year before Coneheads, and a year after Nothing But Trouble, pretty much the worst movie I've ever seen. And I can only say that because I actually sat all the way through it. There are definitely movies that are worse, I think, that I did not sit through. Nothing But Trouble was a terrible movie. If you want to do it for the show, if anybody really loved it, that's fine. I would love to talk about it, but it's not going to be one that I enjoy sitting
through
for the show.
It's not an Eric 5-star.
Finding clips actually will be tough, not because there aren't, but because I'm going to be cringing the whole time. It's hard to hear through the cringe.
I don't think we should deliberately do a movie that's likely to get a 1 or lower star rating from us.
And yet we have.
I don't know if everybody else would feel the same way. It was a dumb movie.
Yes, but we haven't done it deliberately.
That's true.
Just because Eric doesn't like it doesn't mean no one would like it. Just saying.
And I'm not opposed to watching movies that I'm going to hate. I'm just not planning to bring them up.
Throw off your average.
Just a tad.
And that really screwed up his stats.
You have to lower it down from 4.75 to something reasonable.
The lowest star any movie has gotten is 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Conan? Yeah, I guess. Was it Conan? Was it Iron Sky?
Conan and Iron Sky tied it 2.
I'm totally okay with that because they were both terrible.
But not so universally terrible that we panned them as to the bottom end as a group.
Yeah, we have never done a movie that we feel like no one should watch ever as a collective.
So do the math. If everybody gives it a 1 and I give it a 5, I'm just curious, where does that come up to see if we could get down lower 2 than that way?
9 divided by 5 is almost 2, so.
Oh, so it would still be under 2. That's nice.
Hang on, I forgot my mouse.
You did
it the easy way. Look at me. I'm trying to use technology.
Let's see.
Yeah, 1 3/4.
I love Dan Aykroyd, though. Always have. And Dan Aykroyd pretty much just plays Dan Aykroyd.
He did really well, his mother, just saying.
I think he's a really great actor.
I know. Every time I see him, though, I want to watch Blues
Brothers. As he's cast properly.
Exactly. As long as it's the right role. Mother was a good role for him.
It really was.
I thought so.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
And I feel like he brought probably quite a bit to the role because that conspiracy theorist type of stuff, that feels very Dan Aykroyd to me.
It
felt so genuine.
I liked him better in this than I did in Ghostbusters.
And Ghostbusters is very genuine, him too. He's one of those, he's a true believer in the ghost stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's I bet he loved this role. He actually did not, I read that somewhere, he was sent a script and offered the role of Mother, but he made a pitch to be cast as Cosmo instead, kind of the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he would have been a terrible Cosmo.
He ceded after learning that Ben Kingsley was in line for the role. Oh, no, that's okay. That's okay. We could just have the...
That was Ben Kingsley?
Yeah.
That was Ben Kingsley.
Sir Ben Kingsley as Cosmo. This was like the year before Dave, when he played the vice president, the year before Schindler's List. I mean, the man was actually really doing different stuff all the way around.
I recognize his name, but I don't remember what from. It wasn't either of those.
Gandhi?
Huh?
Gandhi?
Well, think more recent for Vanessa.
More recent, Marvel Universe, Iron Man 3, he was the Mandarin insert.
What was his name?
I can't remember the actor's name, but...
The actor that he played?
The actor that he played... Playing the Mandarin.
Playing an actor? Who was he?
God, I can't remember. He was so good.
And he was even better in Shang-Chi.
Yes. And when we got a lot more of him. He was
so
basically a supporting character in Shang-Chi. It was great.
I've seen Shang-Chi.
He was the actor that had the fuzzy bit.
Around with him?
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Did you ever see Iron Man 3? Maybe you didn't.
I don't remember.
I know you've been spotty on the MCU.
You wouldn't have gotten the joke on that. But yeah, that was also Ben Kingsley recently.
So he was
good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How anybody expected us to believe that College Joe Marr turned into adult Ben Kingsley?
Well, even then, you know, Kingsley didn't look Ben Kingsley in us. I mean, he looked a little.
He didn't look Joe Marr.
No,
that's went true. From a Jersey guy with a jersey. We're not going to get in trouble for this. Yeah,
it was the years in prison. They'll do that to you.
Prison changes a man.
So what I actually recognize him from is a miniseries my parents watched called Tut.
Oh. Hilarious. Wow. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
But you recognized him.
I recognized the name.
That was one of the things that I had to say was whoever cast the stunt doubles. Wow.
David Strathern. I got to look it up. Played Whistler.
Who
love him.
I love him.
He's so awesome.
He's a good character.
One of my favorites of his is Alphas.
Yes. I wasn't even going to bring that up because I don't know how obscure it really is, but I loved his role.
Two seasons on Sci-Fi.
Yeah, but then it once one of those got canceled on a terrible cliffhanger, and it just it was.
I know, but it was really good up until that terrible cliffhanger when they canceled it.
This was the same year as A League of Their Own, and he played Ira Lowenstein.
Oh,
the manager,
yes.
Remember?
That's right.
Much younger than on Alphas. It's interesting to look at those because he definitely has aged a
now,
lot.
Surely you've seen A League of Their Own.
Yes, I've seen A League of Their Own. Three times even.
Are you just over there polishing kazoos? Is that what you're doing? Handing them to Jason?
I'm just making sure.
Most recently.
Like something sure that she should that. Absolutely watch.
Oh, yeah.
There's no crying movie? In baseball?
You never seen that? Tom Hanks? T. Hanks? Thanks? No. Never seen Thanks?
One of the shirts I wear at work says there's no crying during tax season.
There's definitely crying during tax season.
That's not true. Yeah.
That is a blatant lie and a foaming
crying. There was also crying in baseball that game. I mean, just
that's true.
Spoilers if you haven't seen the film.
A lot of the crying in tax season was at home. I was there.
True.
It was at my home. I heard it. I felt it.
Were you the one crying?
Sometimes.
Where there is wailing and the gnashing of teeth.
And he was most recently in the new Godzilla movies. So we've seen him doing
yes,
stuff.
Yes,
still.
He was.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Which one was?
David Strathern.
Okay.
You can make me say the name again. Whistler. River.
I might have done that on purpose.
Phoenix.
River Phoenix.
Who was here last week, as I recall.
Carl sounded familiar.
Where have we seen him before?
Man.
This was definitely a couple years after the previous movie.
Yeah, he's grown a bit.
Explorers was his first feature film.
Kind of filled out.
This was one of the last.
Or filled in, more accurate.
Second to last.
This was right after My Own Private Idaho, which was in 91, and a couple years after Last Crusade, where he played, young Indy, the beginning of Indiana Jones Last Crusade. One of the reasons that he took this role, apparently, because he was so deep into the psychosis of his character on the previous movie, as Mike Waters, in My Own Private Idaho.
Yeah.
He wanted a, quote, low-stress money gig movie, which this was it.
That role.
I can see that.
Was he Carl?
He was Carl.
Okay. I thought Carl was cool.
Cool. After watching My Own Private Idaho, this is a movie I would go to get that out of my headspace so I could get back onto my life.
And then, of course, there was the cringy blackface scene that got
from
Sidney Poitier.
Which made it worth it. That scene was made worth it by the look from Sidney Poitier.
Yeah. Wait, who does that look well?
Well deserved.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sidney Poitier. I didn't really have anything to talk about here because his career is weird. Everybody knows who he is if they've watched movies as long as we have, but it's hard to pick out the movies. What I'm saying? What do you know him from? Top of your head.
Man Who Came to Dinner? Or Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Guess Who's
Not
Coming to
real,
Dinner.
Not a real... Has anybody else seen that? Not a real well-known movie, I'd say.
I have.
I think I saw it.
I saw the remake because I was curious how the original
one. Sir With Love?
Yeah. Sir With Love. Now, that's a good one. It was a big one. But they're dramas. Right.
Fire. What's the fire?
I'm smelling smoke here.
Oh, there was a TV show made out of it. It was about a cop in Alabama, and he was in the movie version. It was him.
You have to look it up.
I'm going to have to look it up.
That's fine.
Just a second.
I come back to it. I'll move along. He definitely has to be mentioned. He was an important character in this.
In the Heat of the Night.
I don't remember that one.
There was a television series made after it in the Heat of the Night, but it was Heat, not Fire. Haha.
There you go. Close enough. Donald Logue was in this. Dr. Gunther Janik. I did not recognize him at first. And then I was like, I know his face. Where do I know him from?
Yeah, we actually paused it. My mom, my dad, and I all three said, who is he? Pause.
And I
was like,
did you all come up with Harvey Bullock? Or just
I came up with it. I was like, is that Donald Logue? That's Donald Logue. And they're like, who the heck is Donald Logue? And I'm like, Harvey Bullock, because... Guess what? The three of us are also rewatching Gotham.
Such a good show.
The three of us are rewatching Gotham as we speak, and that's Harvey Bullock.
This was his first credited role in a film.
Oh.
So kind of
he was
him.
Such a baby.
Yeah. Just a tad younger than he is now, but a very recognizable face nowadays. He's one of those actors you've seen in a bunch of stuff without necessarily.
Oh, he is that guy that thing.
A lot of times. Blade was like the earliest thing I ever actually remembered him from. That was like 6 years after this. So. Put over there. We already mentioned James Earl Jones. He was Abbott. Stephen Tobolowsky as Dr. Werner Brandis. My joke there from the beginning of the show had to do with Groundhog Day because, he was Ned Ryerson.
Ding!
And Mary McDonnell. And I I really, really like her. She was in Dances with Wolves a couple years before this. We've already seen her on the show in Independence Day. She was the first lady.
Yeah.
Did you recognize her?
Mm-mm.
No. Shaking my head.
Okay. Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's her. And, of course, I was a big fan of the remake of Battlestar Galactica that Richard likes to pretend didn't exist. And she was a big part of that. So
yeah, they really should make one of those.
It's okay. I don't think
that's how people feel.
I was just looking up Donald Logue because you said his name, and I was like, he did look familiar. He looks familiar because I've been watching What We Do in the Shadows, and he plays a vampire.
There you go. Well, good role for him.
He's got the face for it.
Yeah. $23 million budget, made $10 million its opening weekend, grossed $51 million in the U.S., $105 million worldwide. Was a success. There you go.
It was a success.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sneakers. First of all, who actually had seen this before then? I gotta read on that.
How many hands can I hold up?
Okay, because Richard suggested the movie because he loves the movie.
I've owned it on multiple medias.
And you'd seen it before, but you didn't. I don't remember you saying that. Did you remember you'd seen it before?
Okay, so I knew I'd seen it before, but I'd seen it in the same way that I saw Alaska. I was so young when I was there, I don't remember, but I know I had.
Okay,
Richard, real quick. The plural of media is media because media is itself a plural. Just saying.
Yes, but I like being Shakespearean and making up my own words. Thank you for playing.
I guess that's technically very Shakespearean of you. So go ahead, rock on with your bad selves.
What do we? Anybody got anything?
Oh, somebody.
I mean, is that good or bad?
I saw opinions in your faces when you came in the door.
I've watched it before, but I've not watched it critically. And I'm gonna say, while nobody had an actual cell phone like we would today. A lot of the techno jargon and a lot of the spy sci-fi.
Mm-hmm. The tech.
Some of that speak could still be played in a show today and have the exact same meaning and present the same obstacles.
Except for no security expert worth his salt would put the two motion detectors 3 foot away from the corner.
Facing the opposite direction together. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, well, you know.
Really? That was one of my...
You pay a contractor to run the wires, and sometimes you're lucky if it's in the right room.
My annoyance was the video being able to zoom and enhance, because video could totally do that.
But they still do that in TV shows today.
They still do it in TV shows today, and it's just as bad.
That is a horrible tech trope.
It still stands up.
That's an L, not a J.
But the difference is the voice recognition system would be
so much
better.
It's super big in CSI.
But the password encryption thing, it's still relevant.
So one thing I think is interesting you mentioned there, because we do this a lot. If you see movies just before the cell phone era, how much different would they be if they had cell phones? A lot of times there's movies that could be completely ruined if they had cell phones. This I don't think is one of them.
I don't know.
The scene where he had the car phone would have had a completely different feel with cell phones.
Sure, but would the story be ruined by having cell phones instead? They were still communicating regularly most of what they were doing in the show.
Ryerson would have been able to call from his house instead of going, he had
a phone in his house.
He had a phone in the bedroom.
I'm just saying, I don't think that was the choice. I think if he wanted to call, he would have done that. Instead, he wanted to be mysterious and drive her there, remember?
Right, that's true.
I'm saying, I don't think this movie really suffered from that issue, and it surprises me.
I mean, there's some
variations. Like the close I get is like when he goes to the dinner and has the gun and kind of drags the Russian attaché away, and they're down like in the spooky, like the pool area, and then they're in the car together, stuff like that. Things could have changed because communications could have happened instantly that might have altered the, you know, texture of the situation.
I'm sure a cultural attaché would have had some sort of bodyguard or someone that would have had a communication going.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
Of course, they were able to find him in the car.
Yeah, they had
on the road
somehow
moving to pull him out. Not the real NSA, but the fake NSA.
Yeah.
Spoilers. Actually, that was the fake FBI.
The fake FBI with the fake NSA.
I guess it was,
but that was all. I mean, that was all. How would they do that? Like satellite? No, obviously they don't have
that.
Old-fashioned people tailing them. Yeah,
old-fashioned people tailing them. I was like, how did they find him in the car?
I tell you what it is. It's plot armor. That's all it is. You know, this movie, I don't think was too worried about that kind of stuff.
That was another thing that I had run through my head when he struck the match in the trunk. And I'm like, it's a good thing that this is a post or a pre-2000s movie, because nowadays they have that giant glow-in-the-dark tag that says, just, if you're trapped in the trunk, pull here.
If you're going to trap people in your trunk, don't you get rid of that?
Yeah, that's the first thing I did when I bought
my car. There's got to be a way to... Richard.
I broke that off the trunk in our car the first time I had to use it. It's very, very fragile. And it's not the circumstance that it sounds like. I had actually entered the trunk from the forward compartment.
You shouldn't explain. Actually, it's much funnier if you don't.
I couldn't get back out that way.
Never mind, it isn't funnier.
So I was trying to figure out how I was going to get out of the situation. I saw the glow-in-the-dark thing. So I pulled on it, and it just came right off. Just like right off of there.
This is a total kid-level story. Yes.
Right. I've almost always had SUVs, only. So I haven't had the glowing whatever you're talking about, so I do not have an attachment.
You just crawl over the seat, you're done.
There you go. The trunk thing. I loved the scene with Whistler where he's having him describe stuff.
Oh yeah.
Whistler was such a cool character all the way around.
He was my favorite character in this MVC. Story.
Absolutely. I'm down.
Totally cool with that.
MVC for Whistler.
He's how you play a disad PC in a roleplay game.
The way they portrayed him was so very well thought out and respectful that I was just stunned. And
David's not blind. He played the character very convincingly.
He did awesome with it.
His performance and the way they did everything regarding his character in this movie automatically adds one entire star to my rating for later.
So he gets a star?
Yeah.
Cool. There's a... The sequence where he was doing the thing with the audio.
Where he was driving.
Scene with the driving.
I actually turned around to Julia and I said, if the blind guy is actually driving this van, I'm adding another half a star to my rating for this movie.
I can't add any stars. The system only lets me go up to...
That's okay. The funny thing was, I was watching the movie and thinking, I don't know if that's an improvement over Mother's driving earlier in the show or not.
It really wasn't.
It's like, well, you may as well whistle drive in the first place.
I mean, you can't follow traffic lights because they're owned by the government.
That's true.
It's true.
God, the conspiracy theory stuff was funny.
I enjoyed every time they went into that.
The funnier part of it is in a way that, some of those theories that he was spouting, people still buy today.
They do. You'll still hear talk about.
There are people who will argue with you that our planet is flat, so that doesn't really count for a whole lot, in my opinion.
And carried by turtles or elephants. I can't remember
what was it. It's elephants on the back of a turtle, actually.
Oh, okay, so great. Both.
It was a
great Atuan.
Mel Gibson, Julia Roberts.
Good pull.
There was a conspiracy. Was it called
It was called Conspiracy Theory, yeah. That's
it really went deeper.
I don't know if that'd be a fun movie to watch or not.
I don't know if it'd be fun.
I mean, you know, it's pretty, it's a thriller.
For some reason, my roommate doesn't like Julia Roberts, so I don't look forward to him running around the corner going, do you have to watch that anywhere near this house?
I'm not a huge fan of Julia Roberts, but I loved that one movie she was in with Bruce Willis.
I like Julia. Which movie are you talking about?
You know the one she was in with Bruce Willis?
Ocean's 12?
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh yeah. That movie with the two of them in it.
Yeah, that was great.
And the other 10 people.
There was another ensemble cast. What do you know? They even stuck it in the name there. They were so sure of themselves. The story I thought was really interesting. The pacing was different than I thought in my head for some reason. And I wasn't sure whether or not I liked it at first, but I'm also, again, doing the whole stop-go thing as I'm watching the movie. You know, pausing, getting clips, rolling back, watching stuff again.
See, I'm very much with you on that on this particular movie, but it wasn't my design or intention that it turned out.
I
was still with the pacing, but to be fair, when you talk about my trifecta, all three of those movies have a similar pace.
I thought rhythm, it was a little slow.
It was a little dry.
It's like
it does have some moments.
I knew going into it that it was 2 hours and 12 minutes long,
I didn't.
Which is long for a 90s movie, which we've already established it's not a 90s movie. Or an
80s
movie.
It is a 90s movie.
Which was long for a 90s movie. It's even longer for an 80s movie.
But it really, I'm with Vanessa, though. In watching it, I'm looking at it going, no, this is definitely a 90s movie.
It is. But about an hour in, I thought we were almost done.
Yeah, you know,
there was still another hour and 12 minutes left.
As we saw it, Twin mentions that. And that was something I specifically wanted to tag on, because one of the many interruptions I had, I came in and I looked, and we are at the 1 hour and 1 minute mark of this movie, And it's not even halfway through the movie. I didn't know that until that point. But I looked, I was like, holy, we still have an hour left of this? I thought it was almost over.
That's because it's a heist movie with two heists in it. You get past one heist.
Right. And of course, I didn't know that either because I hadn't seen it before.
Because I did the same thing. I had to pause it about the 1 hour mark.
Three.
Because the first heist led to a second heist.
It did.
And they ended up heisting the same thing. The same thing. Again,
because they realized
it was the MacGuffin. Right. Yeah, I mean that's
the role of a MacGuffin.
There was the bank heist in the very beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
There was the heist of the box, and then they had to heist the box again.
Okay, the bank heist was literally just kind of walked through because it was the opening scenario.
So I think made it feel that way is that in between those, there's that period of Bishop trying to put together the how to deal with the situation. You know, which took this kind of weird turn, right? So they could get Cosmo into the story. So you have this kind of turn where he's going, trying to get answers.
He didn't die in prison, by the way.
Right.
Yeah. Like, this movie could have been two movies, except for then it would have been 2 hour-long movies, and then it would have been a weird distance that way.
But I felt like once it turned, it picked up.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't feel like it. Personally, I didn't feel like it got boring.
It pays off.
You know,
technically,
it was a good payoff.
At that point, I stopped complaining that, oh my God, this movie is so boring. So that's about right.
Huh. It was a longer movie, especially for what we've done. But at the same time, I can't picture cutting out any of the scenes or any parts of it because it would have actually taken away value from the movie. I think all of it was really well placed.
How do we feel it held up then? And like I said, obviously I had a different expectation of the look and tone of the movie than really what it was. And I have no complaints there. There are some sequences that I feel like the way they were shot kind of threw me for some reason. Some of the stuff like the stuff when she's in the house first it's the restaurant, then she goes to the house. Again, another thing that seemed like, why do we make two or three scenes out of this? We could have done this. First they're at the restaurant, and then they go to the house, and she's passing the ID out the window and all that stuff. And all this is shot kind of flat. You know, you pan over a little.
I mean, she was supposed to be on a date.
Right, and I get that. That was another thing that just got me. The printout of the usage of the door
the
card.
The dot matrix printout.
Yeah. Chekhov's printout?
Chekhov's unrealized printout.
Oh, that's right. He just recorded it.
Literally never came up.
Let's just go check his office. They check his office. There's nobody there.
And I'm sitting there the whole time like, why didn't someone look at
the
printer?
Why didn't somebody look at the printout?
They showed us three times that it's just printed out right there. We were waiting for it.
Well, they wanted to show that advanced dot matrix technology.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't the printout that got him caught. It was the fact that she said it was a computer date.
I do believe, actually, Rich, you're probably onto something there, though. I think that even though that's what it feels like in the way it was shot in the story, because why else that little printout right there? But I feel like all they were doing was it was another element of them trying to demonstrate how high-tech a system this was.
High security.
Yeah, not literally in dot matrix is the height of technology, but in the sense of whenever you use a key card, that information is printed somewhere, and that's supposed to ratchet tension or something.
Right.
I think it was just like showing us a motion sensor or a camera.
But they didn't use it.
No, they didn't.
So it didn't need to be there.
Right. It was just like having security guards that we didn't need, you know?
So it was just like the bank heist, which had an ineffective security guard. Maybe they were trying to make a parallel on ineffective security guards.
There's a scene at the beginning that I really love. When they do the distraction thing, and they start the alarm, and they run across, and he jumps over the... Goes over the counter and it lands badly on the other side.
I'm too old for this.
I love that for some reason. It really
I'm too old for this shit.
Set the tone for me right there. What? Anything else? I go to clips. If you want to do.
Because I just adore this movie.
Yeah, I'm sure Richard would be happy to gush all over it for another half an hour if we let him.
People don't sweat.
Either. I have to.
I'd rather just watch it again.
You won't sweat in this.
Better use of your time.
No sweating.
The temperature in that room was 98.6 degrees. And everybody had their collars up.
When Tom Cruise did this scene.
Cosmo sweat.
When Tom Cruise did this scene, he had to catch the sweat droplet before it hit the floor.
That's why you stopped drinking 12 hours before the mission.
I was looking for that, and when he entered the room through the roof panel, he looked like he was glistening and sweaty. And I was like, okay, they're on top of this. And then there's literally nothing that ever happens again in that room that makes...
That makes
sense
it look
for
like
it to be almost 100
there's,
degrees.
There's right. one throwaway line when Cosmo walks through. Why is my so office hot so hot?
Yeah.
Right.
Which he is was sweaty too.
I mean, that was the part of the reality of the scenario.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Yeah.
And one last thing before I let you go to clips. If you had the coolest toy in the world to break into all the websites that you could possibly want to break into, would you leave it sitting on your desk in the same box that it had been
in
for several days in a row in the exact same spot?
It's better than that because he had to have taken it out because he was using it. He used it to screw over his old friend. And then evidently put it back in the original packaging.
Which is why you shouldn't trust office security.
And I have to say this. It is a conditioned box. It's got foam and stuff to hold it in place and secure it and make it safe. If you are not actively using it, that's where you want it to be.
Yes, now, but taking that the box should with then you, in turn be like in a safe or something instead of sitting on his desk in the same place it was a week ago.
High security.
His office desk was probably safer than the safe.
Yeah.
Unless the safe was in his
office.
Unless the safe was in his office.
Just please, they just spent all that money on security for his office. Why would they add a safe?
That's fair. Yeah,
his office is a safe.
Good call.
His voice is his passport.
It took him a while to set up the heist.
Voice is my... Sorry, and I got that somewhere.
I just wanted to, before I let you go to clips, because no one else was letting you get to them. I literally spent the first half of this movie just absolutely stunned because I had heard it talked up so much and I'm like, I don't understand why everyone was so excited about this. This is such a boring movie.
Yeah.
I could not get over that. And once it finally picked up, it never entered my mind again that it was a boring movie. So I'll give it that. But the first half of the movie, I was just absolutely staggered as to what was supposed to be so great about this.
I'm listening to Kid, but I'm watching Jason's face.
Yeah. I can't see Jason's face because Jason's face is behind me.
Yep.
What was his face doing?
Don't worry about it.
Smiling and nodding. Smiling and nodding.
Start with Bishop.
Your communication lines are vulnerable. Fire exits need to be monitored. Your rent-a-cops are a tad undertrained. So that everything seems to be just fine. You'll be getting our full report and analysis in a few days. But first, who's got my check?
So people hire you to break into their places to make sure no one can break into their places?
It's a living.
Not a very good one.
And for anybody that doesn't know, those sounds are a typewriter. This is a device that we used to use to... Never mind.
I've used a typewriter before. I'm not that young.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the listeners who may be younger than you, believe it or not.
I used to have to crank start my typewriter.
Do I need to get out a cane? My own electric typewriter.
To hell with you.
And I loved it, and I miss it. But my favorite typewriter...
Electric typewriters didn't sound like
all
that, though.
All the time, no.
It sounded like...
I was going to say, actually, my dad's electric typewriter sounded very much like that, except there was this faint hum behind everything.
Because of the thing.
Oh, I do remember those. Yeah, that basically were just a typewriter, but they had a
it was like power assist. Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah.
But my grandfather's manual typewriter was my favorite typewriter that I have ever had the pleasure of using. It was an absolutely fascinating device, and I have never gotten my butt whipped so hard as I did when he found out that I had taken apart his typewriter.
We need to add Delirious to the list.
You took it apart? Why would you do this?
The most complicated machine I had ever seen in my life, and I had to know how it works. I have never screamed like that man made me scream.
I called this clip NSA Dick.
National Security Agency. Oh, you're the guys I hear breathing on the other end of my phone.
No, that's the FBI. We're not chartered for domestic surveillance.
Oh, I see. You just overthrow governments, set up friendly dictators.
No, that's the CIA. We protect our government's communications. We try to break the other fellow's codes. We're the good guys, Marty.
Gee, I can't tell you what a relief that is. Dick.
Dick. Good stuff. So that was the kind of like not the hook, right? Was right. Them coming in with the job, which that whole part felt kind of sudden to me. But maybe in an era where there really aren't a lot of ways to back channel things or to, I mean, where hacking was a lot more of an art because it, you know, definitely took pretty specialized equipment to do it. You know, now not any kid with a wristwatch could do it. Wristwatch?
What is this? Wristwatch.
Oh, these things you used to wear on the... Yeah, now they have like antennas and... No, they don't.
Antennas? It's internal.
I'm so off the Vogue.
It has a watch on it.
My Dick Tracy watch had an antenna.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, smartwatches. Dick was smart. There was an element of that that was like suddenly it's like they'd have this scene and then they kind of like level this little kind of moment of threat at the end, you know, say they said his like real name or something. And then like
no, they gave him a poster, a wanted poster with his real name on it.
Well, he said his name and then he opened it up and then saw the poster.
Right, that's right.
And so he opened up the picture and then they cut the scene. And then the next scene is him driving up to their offices. So it's like this was another one of those weird kind of like we went from this scene to another scene kind of unnecessarily.
It led to some weird pacing because weird unverified government agents come into their office. They don't do anything to verify him, and in a way to prod him, they give him the wanted poster so that way he doesn't verify them because they've got dirt.
I would have written the scene so the whole thing took place at the government office. There was no reason for them to be there. I mean, they showed up at his business like they were a legit business, but they could have been trying to get him to be, you know, because the office was important because he goes by later and it's torn down.
But I think I like some of that because
would he have gone to them otherwise?
Part of the breaking, part of the movie, part of this changing scene to scene, part of that whole thing comes from the story was written by someone who was writing a story that could have made a book. And a book, you would do the different scenes in the different locations.
Yeah, I agree.
Then when you go to movie, you're like, okay, let's save money and do things. That's why Star Wars was so profound, because they used a lot of scenes really quickly. But this was not Star Wars.
So that's not the only reason Star Wars was profound.
I was going to say, out of the list of reasons why Star Wars was profound, I'd put that somewhere in the mid-20s. But it belongs on the list.
That's fair. But that is actually kind of the point. In a book, you would write that differently, and that's why you don't film them that way.
Well, and because you get condense that, material. You had the feeling that it was written by like a book, and that's actually one of the things I enjoyed about that.
And of course, it's possible that they were filmed initially with something else in mind.
It felt things more take realistic. Place
in different order, something in between. You know, there could have been other
it does
stuff.
Feel like there was something that should have been between, but I don't think he would have willingly gone to government agents for a job. In fact, he says right after they come to him, I don't work for the government.
And that's before they've actually told him they're any kind of government agency. That was just reading.
But at that point, they've given him enough hints that if he tries to not work for them, he's going to have problems that he doesn't want to have.
Exactly. But at the same time, his group didn't want him to work with them, which is why he had to go to their office to continue the conversation.
Not necessarily important, just kind of an observation.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever.
I'm sympathizing at this point.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Not a test?
This is not a test. The penetration is live. The target is unaware.
Sneaking a foreign intelligence service that might kill us to keep us out is not what we do.
The probable level of security is very low. But if you guys don't want to take that chance just to keep me out of jail, fine, I understand. Don't do it.
Well, Bish, I can't speak for the other guys, but I'm in it for the money. I don't care if you go to jail.
Me neither. I'm in.
Could we maybe just go back to the they might kill us part?
Mother, if I thought that was likely to happen, I wouldn't bring this to you, but there is a risk.
It pays $175,000.
I'm in.
Has anyone figured out what inflation rate would do to that? How much money that would be today?
Just $175,000 in 1992 would be.
Because they were treating it like it was $1 million job, basically.
That's
we can find out.
Yeah, but I see everybody grabbing their phones. So somebody can find out. Let's see. You can move right along a little bit, though. NASA?
Hey, boss. This LTX-71 concealable mic is part of the same system that NASA used when they faked the Apollo moon landings. Yeah, the astronauts broadcast around the world from a soundstage at Norton Air Force Base in San Bernardino, California. So work for them. Shouldn't give us too many problems.
I love Dan Hecker's delivery and stuff like
that. The matter-of-fact way he just throws that out.
And so it's like being lectured by Ray Stantz. So it's when he pulls the Ecto-1 into the garage and says, well, you know, it's got new this, that, it needs a desk, that, you know, so this litany right off his head of, you know. It's perfect. Beautiful.
Never bats an eye, breaks eye contact.
Again, the reason Nothing But Trouble bothers me so much is a movie, because he plays like 17 roles in it. It should have been great.
I got 325,000.
I got 295,000.
You guys are within the kind of a ballpark.
So we got a completely different thing.
I was going to say, we're basically
mine got 344 on the
I got a double pepperoni and cheese coming. See.
Can I have a slice?
Nope.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Thank push you. Over.
Keypad.
Anybody remember how to defeat an electronic keypad?
Oh, don't even joke about that, Martin. Those things are impossible.
Think I'm joking? Like they just put it in. Here, maybe this might help. An old buddy of mine who was in Desert Storm sent it to me. Of course, he was on the other side. Come on, Kreese. There's got to be a way around these things.
All right, all right. This might work.
Yeah? Yeah.
Above?
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give it a shot.
That worked.
I giggled when I watched that one.
It's still a great way to bypass keypads today.
Effective? Question mark.
That unless depends. There's an alarm that goes off when you force. If it's a security door,
yeah. I had some issues with that scene, but it's all right. The biggest one is I've actually kicked down some doors, and they never just open cleanly like that. You break things, it shatters
this
the
is
frame.
A movie housing. Breakdown doors often work like this.
Actually, most movies accurately depict them as destroying or damaging some part
movies
of the door.
Movies occasionally
when you
do this.
Movie doors break down the way props design them to break.
But they actually break. That's kind of my point. This door was perfectly functional after that, and it just doesn't work that way.
Nitpick, why don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, it might have even still been able to latch, which would have been impossible.
Besides which.
My point exactly. She
why,
gets it.
Why pick on the scene when it's just funny? It's just to be funny.
I wasn't
just
amused. Funny. I wasn't amused.
See. You know.
She's been withholding marital favors from Gunther for many, many years, and now she's out to ruin him.
And she's using you to get to her.
And she's using you, me to get to her, you. I know that's confusing, but don't you see what's happening here? You and me, we're just pawns in this ugly little game.
If you love him,
then just keep on loving him. And never let him know that you know what he thinks you don't know. You know?
And give him head whenever he wants.
Give him head. Help.
Cyrano gone wrong.
Yes, that's exactly. I loved the three, and if you love him, and if you love him, and if you love him, I thought the audio was really good, but fun scene as well. That's what I liked in this movie was the fun little scenes like this, because the movie wasn't overall a funny movie.
No,
it wasn't played as a comedy. It just had a lot of these great little moments,
funny comedic elements. Yeah,
it was a heist movie with one-liners.
Mm-hmm. It was situational comedy.
Two-liners. Sometimes
two-liners.
You know, one-liners you think of Arnie.
Fair.
It's a little different.
There was give and take. Two-liners.
Keeps coming back.
Okay. And then, so that first part of it was just the heisty stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then they find out about the scientist and all this. And then there's the pivotal kind of switch, right?
Love the music.
How is this possible?
Cryptography systems are based on mathematical problems so complex they cannot be solved without a key.
Janik must have figured out a way to solve those problems without the key, and he hardwired it into that chip.
Turn it off. Anybody want to crash a couple of passenger jets?
I say, turn it off. Turn it off.
Love it. So tense.
So it's a code breaker.
No. It's the code breaker. No more secrets.
No more secrets.
C-Tech so astronomy.
That was one of the scenes I mentioned where I did notice the music, and it was brilliant. The other one that came to mind that I liked even more than this, like literally made me giddy, was when he goes and abducts the Russian guy from the performance.
Definitely the
concert.
Yeah.
And the music that they are playing in the concert was just perfectly timed to the entire scene of him pulling the guy out at gunpoint that I actually kind of gibbered a little. It was a beautiful, beautifully done scene.
What are you going to say, Jason?
That reminded me of another thing that really annoyed me in this film. The credits made such a big deal out of the shuffling of letters and the unshuffling of letters to make acronyms or anagrams.
Anagrams, yeah.
It made it look like anagrams were going to be wholly important to this movie.
It's just one big plot point.
There's one anagram inside the movie, and it's not even that big a deal.
But what the movie is actually about is decryption. It's about encryption. It's about code breaking.
Right, but just
laying that on the credits when somebody just decided to do something clever in the opening credits is a little heavy.
It just it made it feel like it was going to be more of a plot point than it ended up being, and it's like
that can lead to
Jason
some disappointment.
Loves anagrams.
Chekhov's realized anagram. Mm-hmm.
He would have loved to have seen more anagrams in the movie,
or at least an anagram that was like a password. You know, he needed to know the anagram.
Stronger, heavier presence in the movie is what
he made this big deal.
But I think
it's not a name.
In a lot of ways, I think the whole idea of encryption, which is being represented in here as a construct, that really is the opening of that age, that era of encryption and computer encryption and such, is far more complicated than that. So presenting it as an important plot point more than once actually would have kind of, I think, cheapened the core value of the movie a little bit.
Yeah, it would have turned it into Da Vinci's
fun. Fun, yes.
If it helps, this is the movie that got me into anagrams.
Personally, I think he was just really losing at Scrabble and decided to do something to blow the board.
Like, hey, wait, everybody, you know, stop.
This is important. Soda,
yeah. But that scene, the way it was played, the alternating between him playing with the Scrabble letters and Whistler over there with the the Braille machine. I loved that. That was brilliant. Yeah. But the way it kept cutting back and forth between them and building up the tension and just ratcheting it to, you know, there's going to be this huge break, this huge discovery. I loved that scene.
It was good.
It was so well done.
Really good.
The timing was really good.
And then there's Cosmo.
When I was in prison, I learned that everything in this world, including money, operates not on reality, but the perception of reality.
Pause it. People think a bank might be financially shaky. Consequence,
people start to withdraw their money.
Result, pretty soon it is financially shaky.
Conclusion, you can make banks fail.
I've already done that. Maybe you've read about a few. Think bigger.
Stock market?
Yes.
Currency market?
Yes.
Commodities market?
Yes.
Small countries?
I love the byplay here.
Medium countries.
And that's almost more pertinent now than it was then.
It definitely has echoes of today.
We have cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
I loved the byplay there because it was a way of reminding us not only is Cosmo the villain now.
The callback, because they were doing that exact same kind of
It's like they fell into this habit, this pattern of behavior that is integral to their specific unique relationship. Even though it had been
before the bad times.
Right. All this time. It was great. It was so well done. And those two actors, Robert Redford and Ben Kingsley, pulled it off so flawlessly.
Was he really the bad guy, though?
Cosmo? And that's the other thing, is they built up his premise, his direction for everything, his supervillain need was sympathetic in its own weird way. And those always make the best villains.
Completely agree.
Well, today they do anyway. Actually, a lot of as far as this era, we were just starting down this path of wanting things a little darker. We weren't there yet.
Yeah, the early 90s, we hadn't actually reached dystopic levels yet.
Nobody probably knows because it's such an off-kilter, but like when the X-Files became a thing.
96?
And we're talking mid-late 90s, right? Mid-90s, yeah. As particularly when they became known, when they've been around for a couple years. Because I want to say the X-Files movie, the Fight the Future, I think came out in 96, 97, somewhere in there. And it was after like four seasons or something. Anyway, somebody will correct me anyway. It's the internet. Somebody will correct me if I'm right. It's the internet. But that period, that trust no one kind of, you can't trust the government. There's shadow governments, there's conspiracies. There's things going on that, you know, are victimizing everybody and you can't do anything about it. That period of helplessness and distrust really blossomed in the early mid-90s. This was at the forefront of that a lot, I think, not in the middle of it. So with that in mind, his, you know, Cosmo's angle on that is all very kind of academic in a way.
Yeah.
It's very sympathetic. I thought it was beautifully done.
Yeah, it's something that my mom pulled out. She's like, pause it. I was like, what? And she's like, you know what this is the plot to? Mr. Robot.
Oh, wow. There you go.
She's like, this movie is Mr. Robot in 2 hours.
Oh, wow. You got to wonder if this was an inspiration for them. That's really not, that's spot on.
What's Mr. Robot?
It's really good.
It's a really good series.
It's on Prime,
totally,
I think.
It's totally bingeable.
Yeah. It's Rami Malek stars in it and Christian Slater.
Yeah, Rami Malek and Christian Slater.
I've heard a lot of good things about it.
It's an interesting combination.
It is.
So good.
It's the first place Malek from. So, yeah.
You said it was on Prime?
I think so, yeah.
I'm going to have to add it.
I think it was a Prime original, actually.
No, it was USA original.
USA, okay.
I never got around to watching it because the name always confused me because Mr. Robot was the name of a tool I used for World of Warcraft gear.
That sounds very Richard somehow. Yeah, this is one we've all been waiting for.
Hi, my name is Whitfred.
Hi, my name is Werner Brandis. My voice is my passport verified.
That joke would not play undercurrent equipment because we don't have tape with speed controls.
Yeah, that's true. It would have been hard to screw that up.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. You're
love it when the tech gets in your way. That's a trope. Right?
Oh, speaking about tech. When they were talking about, there was a scene, and I missed the little line, but there was a little line there where they talked about, I helped him make some free phone calls in prison. And that was that. That was a reference back to freaking, which mm-hmm. was a thing back mm-hmm. in the days where you were.
Which we'll touch on a little more adroitly next week.
Yeah, it's a
one of the characters is named Freak. The Freak.
Because of the Freak. Okay.
We'll do all the kind of hackery stuff next week.
Acid burns.
None of it's real, but we'll do all the hackery stuff next week. Because the promise of hacking in the postmodern world in the 90s was really pretty. But
actually, it probably was, yeah.
Yeah.
Instead, we ended up here.
Okay. Sorry. Nobody?
I thought you couldn't kill your friend, Cos.
I missed on purpose. Now give me the box.
Take the goddamn thing. I don't want it. You win, I lose. That's what you want, isn't it? Say it. Say it.
Yes!
So it was personal. But more than that.
I'm sorry, Cos. Could have shared this with you. I know. Could have had the power. I don't want it.
Don't you know the places we can go with this?
Yeah, I do. There's nobody there.
And he said, exactly. I missed that word. But he said, there's nobody there, which is poignant. He's like, yeah, the place you can go with, you're all alone out there on that precipice. There's nobody doing that, and there's nobody to share it with because, you know, you're ruining it all. You're destroying it all.
He didn't want to be there with him, though. That entire exchange was weird.
And then
weird.
When he says, exactly, it's, yeah, because that's the point, is bringing everybody down to the same level and being out there the one who made that happen. And but the next sequence there where he's I didn't want to draw it out obviously, but the next sequence there where he's, which I guess I could have because I'm talking about it, where he's threatening to shoot him, you know, and the way he looks, the way, again, Ben Kingsley's performance of the character, that kind of haunted, determined, haunted quality. He's just lonely. He's already seen that he's alone in this. And Marty has that opportunity to bring something back into his life that's meaningful, somebody he could actually be out on that limb with.
But he never asked for that.
No.
The only thing he ever did was say, ha-ha, I'm going to send you to jail now. Bye. Throw him out in the street. He never said. There was never anything in the movie that even came close to him.
Right. I don't think it was till that moment.
When he said, we could have had the world together. We could have shared this, you and I. When? How? What?
No, it wasn't like if you'd done what I wanted 5 minutes ago. It was now. It was if you were willing to capitulate now, if you were going to be in this with me now, we could have done, you know. I get what you're saying, but I think that this was the evolution of the character that fast. It wasn't really thought out. He was just realizing in that moment that he was alone.
See, I'm thinking the script really wasn't thought out.
I don't think that exchange was written well. I don't know.
This was the first time I think I'd gotten that out of it, but I saw it because I feel like I could see the thought process in the acting. I thought I could see Kingsley, you know, mulling that over, going through that experience, that emotional experience in his head.
The only way that I can see it working myself is if it's literally them trying to portray someone who will literally say anything to get their thing.
I don't think he was to that point yet.
But what is truth in the end? I've seen this a few dozen times, so I've had a number of times to go through that, and I really do think that was a changing, evolving character.
So you're on the same page.
I'm totally.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I will capitulate halfway.
Okay. I like that.
Ben Kingsley is amazeballs.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And he took a horribly written scene that made no sense. And when you look in his eyes as he's portraying this scene, he made it make sense by having that evolution in the back of his eyes where you go, oh, that's what he's doing.
Totally disagree, man.
Totally Ben Kingsley.
I would follow you if it weren't for the fact there are so many other points in both the music and the timing and the talking at where the timing is so perfectly directed.
It's an emotional experience.
None of this was by chance.
Okay.
Winnebago.
I want a Winnebago. What? Fully equipped. Big kitchen, waterbed, AM/FM.
I'm sorry, I got to hear that again. I love that.
I do that what sometimes.
I want a Winnebago. What? Fully equipped. Big kitchen, waterbed, AM/FM CD, microwave.
This is not a car dealership, pal.
He wants a Winnebago.
All right, a Winnebago.
I love that man's voice.
Burgundy interior.
Even when he says a Winnebago.
Now the box.
I have never taken my wife to Europe.
I'm sorry to hear it. Give me the box.
God, I loved James Earl Jones in this scene. That whole scene was so good.
And it made me laugh because the first time they were going through their wish list and talking about, my wife and I have never gone to Europe.
Right.
And then he goes, and
back
Tahiti.
When it was boring.
My dad Tahiti's immediately popped up. Tahiti's not in Europe. And then 20 it's minutes later, Europe. They're doing the thing. It's like, and Tahiti. Don't forget Tahiti. Tahiti's not in Europe.
And then Carl's like, look, when you're done, you give geography less. I love that whole. I wish once I, you have I could have capped the whole scene.
Yeah, you could have capped the whole scene.
Yeah.
Good and stuff. You mean you could have anything in the world and all you want is my phone number?
Oh, man. That was tight.
I want to hear. Do you have that clip? Because I want to hear Vanessa talk about the phone number.
No, I don't. But she could talk about it.
The phone number isn't even my biggest problem.
No.
It was the closest thing to a romance.
I didn't expect it to be your biggest problem.
Well, I guess there was the other
one. No, it isn't.
No, actually, kind of in that scene when he looks at Liz and she's all like, no, I'm fine. That was actually the romance. That implication that I got everything I wanted when he looks back at her.
Yeah.
I got what I want right here. Yeah,
we're getting to it.
Wow.
The flip was when he said, I'm sorry. And she's like, that's okay. And he's like, no, I'm sorry.
I'm glad they didn't try to make it any more blatant than that.
That's true.
That was a really good place to draw the line, I felt.
And why? After weeks and weeks of going to her apartment and turning her apartment into this super headquarters, do they do the greatest sneak of their life? Where they got a hold of the box that any government anywhere would absolutely kill for, and they go back to headquarters.
Back to their office. The one that they cleared out, right?
The one that they cleared out because it wasn't safe, because it was going to be watched.
And guess what? It was.
It was. By the real NSA.
Who, by the way, can't do that.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
No, they really can't.
All I can say is,
serious. You got life in school, Jimmy, really?
What was that?
Thumbs up, thumbs down, Rich.
Oh, good. Thumbs down. I'm sorry. This is one of those movies that when you talk about, will I actually say someone should watch it? I always do because I absolutely love the movie. I guess the closest I can do to a thumbs down is there are some parts that run a little slow. There are times where nowadays I get on my cell phone where in the past I would be like, okay, all right, I forgot there was a lot of talking here. But then you have to play the game during the dinner scene where you're like marking off the words from my voice as my passport to make sure she got them all. But I guess I'm going to go with that. And it's really lame because I really just don't have thumbs downs on this. A thumbs up, I am going to go like just Whistler's character totally. Just, I mean, all the characters are good. All the timing is great. Everything is great. But Whistler's character and the way he portrays and the way he brings so much action. When I play role-playing games, I sometimes try to bring that level to it. And I always fail because Whistler was awesome. It's one of those movies. I've watched it dozens of times. And I've owned it on multiple media and and medias, and I will always watch it, and I will sit down and watch it with people. Again, part of my trifecta. I'm giving it 5 stars.
Nice,
obviously.
All right. Vanessa, what do you think?
Thumbs down. Still the romance.
Be still my heart.
There was no reason for it. They could have just as easily used her for the piece that she played in this as one of the operatives like everyone else.
Sometimes an ex can stay an ex.
Exactly.
Or a not. Can stay and never have been.
Yeah,
just could have been somebody who was good at being whatever, you know.
She could have been good at being the hot chick, because that's pretty much what she was. Actually.
Yeah, why did he want her in on this? Because he just wanted
She needed
date?
Her to explain to him the math. From the heavily math-oriented seminar.
She was brought in as the math person, and then she was the date.
She got herself that role, though, and that was a smart thing.
That's fine, but again, she could have just been one of his operatives or someone that she works with every once in a while, and it would have fit the exact same glove that they were trying to make it fit with a romance. No reason for it.
disagree a little bit, but I get it.
That being said, that is literally my only down point. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Ching.
I hadn't expected that, by the way. The movie being just old enough and not really knowing that it had much that was exciting about it or anything, I really, because it is a little cerebral and it's a heist flick, which we hadn't really done much of that.
So. I really like heist flicks, and this was awesome. Like a really good heist flick that had multiple heists in it, and that amused me.
We should do Ocean's 13. I like that one.
And that being said, I would also give it 5 stars.
Woohoo!
Wow. Jason, I don't imagine you're going to say the same. So
I
we'll
can't
go to
imagine
you next.
That he would.
It does not get 5 stars for me.
Okay, kid.
I heard 5 stars. Click.
He heard me say 5 stars.
He heard what he wanted to hear, son.
My voice is my passport.
5 star me. There was so much that just... On a movie where, like he said, the tech could really hold up. A lot of the tech could really hold up. I get that. But then they just play willy-nilly with where it works and when it works and how it works. You know, I don't think he was moving less than 2 inches a second.
He was not.
He was not.
I can absolutely verify that. I pulled out a stopwatch.
It wasn't that hot. It wasn't that slow.
And it wasn't as boring as that would have been to watch.
Oh, I understand that.
Oh, no, it was still terribly boring.
And it was still terribly boring to watch at the pace that it was.
I liked it.
It was meant to be.
I meant that one specific scene where he was trying to
move 2 inches.
That one
specific scene where he was just creeping across the floor. And then they yell at him, hurry up!
What?
What?
Loved that.
What?
The one thing I can't do right now is to hurry up. And, you know, there could have been... It was slow in the first half. So slow. So very boringly slow. And I wish half of it wasn't there because it was so boringly slow. And it just, a lot of it didn't make sense. People should have gotten shot when they didn't get shot. If he wanted him dead, that's it. Oh, that was another thing. The people were going to kill him instead of give him his money. Take the box and kill him. They had the gun ready. They were going to shoot him. And then all of a sudden the guy goes, your mother's on the phone, which I'm guessing his mother's actually dead or something. And it was a reason for him to go, oh.
He's living under an assumed identity anyway. Why couldn't they figure out that would be unrealistic?
Right. But it's just, if they wanted him dead, they wouldn't have wanted him dead because of the way the rest of the plot line went with the whole, you're going to go to jail for what you did to me and da-da-da-da-da. The revenge wouldn't have worked if he'd killed him right there. And there's just so many things that just really kind of annoyed me. But it was a heist flick, and it had 3 really good heists in it. Mm-hmm. And that amused me. And the star power in this film was undeniable. It was almost a too many chefs situation. Because inevitably, when you put so many stars in the movie, it's either going to be 100% amazeballs or 50% suck. And I think this movie turned into closer to the 40-50% suck.
Really?
Because it was just like, oh.
I thought they balanced their roles well. I didn't really feel like there was much crunch in there.
Each of them were well in of themselves, but I didn't like the way the movie all came together and the way that it was written. It did not track me. But, like I said, it had 3 heists, and the 3 heists were really good. And it gets 3 stars. One for each heist.
One for each heist.
Oh, I can't do 6. It only goes up to 5.
3.
Right.
Oh, I must have misheard you. Sorry.
Kid.
3.
I would have said 9 because he was saying, oh, 3 stars per heist? Okay, we could do that. Thumbs down. Jason stole one of my big ones. I had mentioned earlier that I sat through the first half of this movie going, "This, I don't get it. It's so boring." But not my biggest thumbs down, and my biggest thumbs down hasn't been mentioned yet, although Jason came dangerously close to it. One of my least favorite tropes ever, and one that I feel is very dangerous to use, is hugely present in this plot, and that is the bad guys should have won, but in this movie, the bad guys won. There are 2 points in the movie where the bad guys have won, and there is no believable reason why that changes. They should have had this. They should have walked away from it. The good guys screwed up to the point that they lost, and then it gets miraculously redeemed by some deus ex stupidia on one person or another's part. This movie does that not once, but twice. And I hate seeing it done even once when it's that bold and blatant. Having it twice in the same movie is a very definite hard point for me.
Really curious about the sequences you're talking about.
The first one, of course, is very obviously when they turn over the fucking box and then run away. At that point, it's a walkaway victory for the bad guy's team. The only reason there is still any story to be told after that is because, someone remind me, actually, I've blocked it out. What was the stupid reason why the good guys are able to get back in the movie after turning over the box again? Because they go looking for a lead and they find out that the building that they went to, he's like, there's one way to find out. They go there, the building's being demolished. And then somehow they manage to get back on track again.
They kill the Russian consulate member and kidnap him and take him back to headquarters.
Right. The only reason they're able to get back in the game is because the bad guys literally dragged them back into the game. It was a done deal. They had walked away with the win, and then they go after the guy and not only don't kill him, they drag him back to headquarters. To do their little villain monologue thing. And the big reveal, Cosmo's the guy behind it all. He didn't die in prison.
That was because Marty was part of the plot, not just the box.
I was partially disconnecting already at that point. But yes, I understand where you're going with that. Cosmo only dragged him into this specifically to get his revenge or whatever, I guess. I don't know. It was never believable.
Same reason, obviously, that he engaged him in the first place. Yeah, it's all kind of, obviously, that wasn't satisfying.
Right.
So we got to drag him over to the office so I can gloat in his face.
And then they've won again. They've got him right there. And it's, I can't kill my friends. Kill my friends. Walks out the door. Bad guys wait for a good 60 seconds before actually executing them, long enough for the guy in the ceiling who hesitates. I mean, he has to say now three times before the guy actually comes jumping down through the ceiling. And even then, nobody impulsively fires when a guy suddenly comes crashing through the ceiling.
How often do you see you got the supervillain, you got his flunkies, you got the good guys, you got the good guy, whatever. Supervillain says, okay, shoot him. And one of the flunkies immediately goes, bang, done.
And that's the trope that he hates.
It's the trope you're talking about, right?
That is exactly what I'm talking about. Okay. I never appreciate it when that happens. And when it's this bold and blatant, and like I said, there's 2 points in the movie when the bad guys have walked away with the win, and then they screw it up themselves. I struggle with that. It's an issue for me.
All right.
So there are other tiny little nitpicks that I may or may not have felt were important, but that's my major thumbs down. Thumbs up. I've already kind of touched on most of these. Obviously, the blind guy, greatly done. The music, fantastic. Oh, the date. I loved the date. The whole...
Yeah.
The whole trick that they pulled there. I had an issue with that because I couldn't figure out when she steals the card, sticks her hand out the window and he steals the card. I'm like, wait a minute. They're already in the building. Isn't this kind of poorly timed at this point? How are they going to get the card to him in the building? And I guess in my head, I figured, he had like a little scanner thing and it copied the magnetic signature and now they're copying that on it. But that's using technology that exists now.
Right.
That would be believable now. Was not believable in 92. Right. So I'm not sure what the actual gimmick that they pulled to make that happen was. But and James Earl Jones, of course, I already mentioned. Adding half a star simply for him popping into the movie unbilled because I love that guy. My final rating is 2.5 stars.
Oh, well, okay. Lowest one in the room. Interesting. What's that bring us to, Rich? What do you got?
Well, what was your number?
It still needs your rating.
I'm sorry. Is that really?
I have you down as a 5. Is it not a 5?
No, I'm going to do 5 stars.
Okay, that makes it an average of 4 stars.
I was really tempted. After everything I've heard, I was really tempted. But yeah, I had to think about it. I was like, nope, we're good.
Yep. No, I would still put this in my list.
You know, you need a 5-star sounder that you can just play off the soundboard. And
like if we add an all 5-star, or are you just talking for me?
If we ever just have an all 5-star, I'll make the sounder myself. Bing, bing.
How would that sound, Rich?
We have to do it before I can get that excited.
Oh, gosh.
I take too many meds to be excited without an actual provocation. I don't know if
there is a movie on the planet that would get 5 5-star ratings from this group.
I don't know.
Possible. We got close.
So close last week.
Yeah. I think that may be as close as we're ever going to get. I think that may be as close as we're ever going to get.
Cool. What's up next? Oh, we already talked about it.
Hackers.
Yep, we're doing Hackers. Hackers!
Angelina Jolie's first movie.
And Dade, what's his name? Sherlock from Elementary. He's great. And a bunch of other cool people, actually. It's going to be a fun movie to talk about.
Matthew Lillard,
serial killer. Oh, it's going to be good. Okay, so make sure you watch it before next week and then join us for the show. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm going to go ahead and get out of here for this week. Thank you very much for joining us for Exposition Street, for Richard, for Vanessa, for Jason and Kid. Bye-bye.